Now, the issue in these two chapters has been the return of the Lord Jesus. The question raised in chapter 24 was, when will these things be? What will be the sign of your coming and of the close of the age? We've already seen the certainty of his coming. He told us that the era of between his first and second coming would be marked by disruption, distress, destruction, and deception. And we see that. And we've seen that the timing of his coming is imminent. It's next, if you like, on his to-do list. The hour is unknown. The response is to be ready. But this afternoon, we, if you like, come to the sharp end and we ask ourselves, what does it actually look like to be ready? And for the rest of chapter 24 and 25, we have these three parables and one incident that's described as a parable but actually isn't. And these parables teach us about being ready. And therefore, my aim this afternoon is that knowing the ultimate destination, Jesus will return, that each of us is ready when he comes back. We're going to look at the parable of the talents in detail. But before we do that, I'd like us to touch briefly on the parable of the faithful steward, 24, verse 45 to 51, and the parable of the wise and foolish bridesmaid, 25, verses 1 to 13, the faithful steward. And this simple parable, 24, verse 45 through to the end of the chapter, tells us that being ready for the return of Jesus looks like being faithful. The emphasis in the parable is on wisdom and trustworthiness. The master represents the Lord Jesus. The master goes away. The master entrusts to his household manager the household. And the emphasis is on wisdom, responsibility, faithfulness, and accountability. The implication is obvious. How wise are we? Everything we have, our money, our own personal gifts, our life circumstances, our opportunities in the service of Jesus, our responsibilities at church, in family, at work, and so forth, you know, it's all given to us on trust by the Lord Jesus. And we are to be faithful so that when he returns, he finds us faithful in his service. Consider yourself a young potential heir to a vast estate. May take a bit of a stretch of imagination, but consider yourself as a young potential heir to a vast estate. You finally reach your age of maturity the day you inherit, and you discover that your guardians have squandered the whole lot. Faithfulness and wisdom. Am I faithful? Am I trustworthy? Verses 45, 46, and 47. Who then is the faithful and wise servant whom his master set over his household to give them their food at their proper time? Blessed is that servant whom his master will find so doing when he comes. Truly, I say to you, he will set him over all his possessions. So I suppose it is worth doing something of an inventory. Some here will be paid an extraordinary amount of money, probably far more than you're worth. Others have tremendous opportunity, great family strengths, personal gifts, and so forth. Others have less. Some have friendship groups and so forth. God has given great responsibility in all of these. How trustworthy am I? So if the first parable is faithfulness and wisdom, the second is wisdom and waiting. Verses 1 and 2 of chapter 25. Then the kingdom of heaven will be like the 10 virgins who took their lamps and went to meet the bridegroom. Five of them were foolish, five were wise. Now, this is a parable about being prepared for a long delay. In the first century, a wedding, the groom's family hosted and funded the reception. I've always thought that's a thoroughly bad idea. the wedding ceremony took place, the ceremony at the bride's home, and then everybody sort of traipsed across the groom's place, and there they had a great shindig. But there was a long delay, a wait. The ceremony went on longer than expected. Was it the bride spending time doing her hair? I don't know. Was the Uber not quite as on time as they hoped it would be? Who knows? Maybe they just got distracted. And so the wife's bridesmaids, knowing that they had to be ready however long the delay, had spare oil, and the foolish didn't. And the point is very simple. Jesus warned that there would be a long delay. With the Lord, a day is like 1,000 years, and 1,000 years is like a day. He told us what it looks like as we wait. And so am I waiting? Am I persevering? Let me say, I think it's a mistake to speculate and to read our own pet spiritual project into the oil, if you like. You know, some people see great significance in the oil, in every tiny detail of a parable. And I don't think that's the point when you read a parable. You're meant to stay with the main road. And the issue here is, are you ready for a long wait? So the first parable, be wise, be faithful. The second parable, be wise, persevere, persist, be prepared. Don't be caught napping when he comes. Don't be caught out when he comes. Don't be caught short when he comes. It's no time for late night shopping when he comes. And so it's no good saying, well, do you know, I was ready once. But Mum and Dad were ready. You should have seen me in my first year at university or when I was a new grad teacher. I was really ready then. We were ready when we were newly married. Wow, you should have seen us then. My wife, she was ready for the return. The idea that I can leave getting ready to some later stage or to some more convenient period of my life, there's an issue of urgency here. The question is, are you ready now? And are you ready for this long delay, steadfast and persevering? You find so often in the city here, people suggesting, well, do you know, when I'm a bit less busy, perhaps in my retirement, I'll be ready then. I'll have all sorts of, I've got too many fish to fry at the moment. And Jesus says of the five bridesmaids who were not ready, he actually describes them, the word for foolish is morai. They were morons. They just weren't ready. Now, in that context of faithfulness and wisdom and waiting, Jesus tells the parable of the talents. And that's, as I say, where we're going to spend our time. We're going to have three major points: the commission of the master, the commendation of the faithful, and the condemnation of the fraud. It is absolutely a parable about plotting a wise course now in light of a certain future reality. He's definitely coming back. He's left us with stuff to do. Are we wise as we plot a wise course now in the light of his return? And so the commission of the master, it's there in verse 14. Notice the four. For it will be like a man going on a journey who called his servants and entrusted to them his property. And I think this begins to show us what it actually looks like in terms of hard detail to be ready when he comes back. Of course, it's the day before email, Skype, iPhones, and so forth. And so communication is limited and travel took a long time and the journey was a long journey. And so if you were going on a long journey, you had to find somebody who you could really trust. You couldn't call them or ask them to show them on the video what's it on their telephone or whatever. And here we have a man with considerable wealth and he has to go on a long journey. He's going to be away for a significant period. And so he takes his three servants and he commissions them for service in his absence. To one, he gave 5 talents. To another 2, to another 1, to each according to his ability, and then he went away. Now, once again, clearly the master is meant to represent Jesus. Notice again the four, which ties our parable tightly to chapter 25 and then back into chapter 24. But at this point, when we need to do just a little bit of work about what the talents actually are. Because the Greek word talanton is translated the way it is as talent, there has been considerable confusion. Our English word talent speaks of me and my individual gifts and abilities, or you and your individual gifts and abilities. So Johnny is gifted at playing the flute. Jessica is a very able hockey player. Sam is brilliant with figures. Britain's got talent. Therefore, people have taken the phrase, to one he gave five talents, to another two, and to another one, and suggested this parable has to do with us using the natural gifts and abilities that God has given each one of us effectively and to the full for gain in this world because of the confusion about talent, gifts and abilities. It goes something like this. If you're gifted in business, go for it. Rise to the top. Make the most of your talents for Jesus. Make sure you excel in business. If you're good at drama, reach for the stars, take to the stage, tap the boards, get your name in floodlights for Jesus. It'd be a terrible thing to waste your talent in drama. If you're able in the schoolroom, lead the school, become head teacher. In other words, actually, very similar to what the world tells us, realize your potential, don't squander your talent. It would be wrong not to become the best person you could be in the world's eyes for Jesus. Now, just a couple of second thought shows that that has to be wrong. You can see from your footnote that a talent was a monetary unit and it was equivalent to 20 years' wages for a labourer. Now, I got my calculator out and had a little look at what an agricultural labourer, and I do happen to know what an agricultural labourer is worth. Around about, you can't get an agricultural labourer from less than about 12 quid an hour nowadays. And so the verse should read something like this. Well, a talent is worth 499,200 pounds. And therefore, verses 14 to 15 should read like, it's like a man going on a journey. He called his servants and entrusted his property. To one he gave five talents, that's 2,496,000. To another, 998,400. And to another, one talent, which was the 499,200, each according to his ability. Now, I'm conscious that for one or two of you, you know, 2,496,000 may just be a week's pocket money. But may I say to the most of us here, that is a huge sum of money. And still we have to ask, well, what does it actually represent? And once again, we have to say, well, not my particular gifts and abilities in terms of the capabilities I have been given. Look at verse 15 closely again. To one he gave five talents, to another two, to another one, to each according to his ability. So the talent is nothing to do with the ability. The talent is the monetary unit, five of them, two of them, one of them. The ability is the ability. Nor can we say that the talent or the money represents the Christian gospel itself. It can't be that he gave a bit of the gospel to this person and a bit of the gospel to that person, as if the news of Jesus' kingly rule can be divided out into eight bits, five here, two here, and one there. Now, in the context of Matthew's gospel, the thing with which the Lord Jesus entrusts his disciples on his departure is his work in advancing the growth of the kingdom through the proclamation of the gospel. That ties precisely with chapter 24, verse 14, where Jesus says, this gospel of the kingdom will be proclaimed throughout the whole world as a testimony to all nations, and then the end will come. It ties actually with some of Jesus' earliest words in the gospel, in which he promises, follow me and I will make you fishers of men, to his disciples. And his closing work in the gospel, all authority in heaven and earth has been given to me, go therefore and make disciples of all nations. So then, each of us has different gifts, each has different opportunities, each has different situations and stations and positions in life. God knows that. You look around this room, there are 120 or something of us. We're all very different with different opportunities and places, gifts and abilities. And he entrusts to each one aspects of his business, and the business is the proclamation of the gospel, each according to his or her position, with the expectation that we seek to advance and maximize his assets wherever he's put us with whatever gifts and abilities he's given us. Faithfully, using what he's given us for the advance and spread of the gospel word, looking after it well, wisely. Patiently, going on steadily, not giving up, keeping at it till he comes back, persevering in maximizing the assets he has entrusted to us. There's the commission. Now, I think it's worth pausing for just a moment and thinking about this commission, letting it sink in a bit. You know, that word for servant is literally in verse 14, slave. And so it's not hard, is it, to picture the slaves at their master as their master disappears over the horizon in his BMW. There were no checkbooks in those days, no bank accounts. Cash was king. And so what did they actually have, this guy with 2.5 million quid? Was it in garments? That's the way you stored wealth in some areas. Diamonds, was it? Was it land? Was it just solid gold, a great treasure chest? You can imagine as he disappears in his chariot, looking down at what they've been given. 3 million quid. Or sorry, 2.5 million quid. 1 million quid. 500,000. What an honor. What an extraordinary privilege. What responsibility. What opportunity. Remember the first time my dad left me on our little family farm alone for the first time. I was over 40. That, I think, tells you something about him and what he felt he could trust me with. And it was after I was married, I've always slightly held that, you know. But I remember thinking, you know, I'm here, I'm in charge. The Lord has entrusted to each of us, each according to his, her ability, the work of his kingdom, his reputation, the advance of his business, his concerns. They're in our hands. I wonder if you ever thought of it like that. What does it look like to be ready for his return? Well, being ready looks like seeking to maximize the work that he's entrusted to us. May I say, it is the highest and most wonderful commission you will ever receive. I've reached the stage now where I witness people reaching the end of their working life. It's hard to believe that at 60, but there you are. Press the fast forward button on whatever it is you do. You may have risen by that stage to the top of your profession. Maybe your name has become a household name. Maybe you provided not only for yourself and your family and set things up for generations, but ultimately, if that's all you've actually done, just to do with this world, I mean, it's just incredibly shallow. Thin. Limited. Conversely, imagine yourself coming to the end of your working life, or indeed to the close of your years. Oh, he made me a security guard. I was entrusted with his work on the door, and I sought to maximize the proclamation of the gospel in this company. He gave me opportunities as a doctor. And, you know, I made sure that I was placed as a doctor in a particular place where I could really maximize the advance of the Christian gospel. I was an IT worker, a plumber, I don't know, a butcher, a baker, a builder. And wherever I was in this particular place, particular gifts and ability, personality I have, I sought to maximize the advance of the Christian gospel. I was a teacher. You know, I really sought to live for him and set up opportunities so that the kids in the school could really hear the Christian gospel. Imagine yourself coming to the end of your working life with that, and not just some thin, shallow, this world achievement. All I had time to do was to pray, but I did pray. I had X weeks holiday a year, and I did use them in his service. I was able to read with one or two colleagues and talk to them about the Lord Jesus. You know, I helped make a meeting like this possible. You know, I operated the sound disc and twiddled the knobs. And I put out the chairs or whatever it happens to be, cooked the sausage rolls. I taught in Sunday school. Not to boast, but I really did try and do something useful. The commission. Not to be a surveyor, an accountant, a call center worker who just happens to be Christian, but to be a Christian who just happens to be whatever it is. I love the commendation. Look at it briefly in verses 16 through 23. He who received the five talents went at once and traded with them, and he made five talents more. So also he had two talents more, but he who had one went and dug in the ground and hid his master's money. Now, after a long time, the master of those servants came and settled accounts with them, and he who received the five talents came forward, bringing five talents more, saying, "Master, you delivered to me five talents. Here I've made five talents more." And his master said to him, "Well done, good and faithful servant. You've been faithful over a little. I will set you over much. Enter into the joy of your master." Now, I love that phrase, "well done, good and faithful servant." It speaks of personal, individual, specific accountability. And you can kind of imagine the master looking at the servant with a mixture of pride and joy, satisfaction and love. "Well done, good and faithful servant." I think it's a beautiful image that when Jesus returns, he will summon me and he will summon you, and we will stand personally before him. And you can see that he sees, he knows, he cares. Nothing is forgotten. Nothing goes unnoticed. Everything is rewarded. "Well done, good and faithful servant." It's possible, isn't it, to think, you know, "I've done very little." Some of us will think that, "Oh, I've done absolutely nothing." We kind of beat ourselves up. But he sees even the tiniest thing. That text sent, that card written, that meal cooked, whatever it happens. "Well done, good and faithful servant." You know, in the next so-called parable, which is actually not a parable about the sheep and the goats, even a cup of cold water given to a Christian disciple has not gone unnoticed. You come regularly to your small group. You're looking to encourage other people. "Well done, good and faithful servant." It's lovely. Pray for a non-Christian colleague at work. "Well done." The commendation there, nothing goes unnoticed, nothing is forgotten, everything is rewarded. But look at the nature of the reward. "I will set you over much." Now, in the equivalent parable in Luke's gospel, I love it, there are 10 minas. The sums are very much smaller. It's just 3 months' wages, that's all it is. And the one who's made 10 minas more is rewarded with 10 cities. And as I like to say, you know, even if that city is, I did actually say on one occasion, "even that city is," and named a city, and one of the senior ladies in the church came up to me afterwards and said, "I come from that city." She was a bit more gracious than that, I have to tell you. So I'm very casual. But, you know, even if that city is Plymouth, you know, 10 cities and 3 months' wages. Just look at the generosity of it. Extraordinarily generous, the master, as if he's actually looking for opportunity and excuse to lavish blessing on his servants at his return. He's glad when we do something. It may seem ever so small to us. It may appear trivial to others. Well done, good and faithful servant. You've been faithful with a little. I'll set you over much. May I say, this shows the absurdity of the person who says, oh, if I were to get involved in such and such an area of work, it would be such a sacrifice. That's absurd. Sacrifice when he's going to lavish reward upon you? Don't even let yourself go down that route. Notice also that nobody's earning rewards as such because the money was given to them in the first place. And what is then given to them as a result far exceeds anything reasonable in terms of kind of transactional stuff. And then under this heading of the commendation, we've seen the commendation itself, we've seen the reward, and then look at the joy. Enter into the joy of your master. I think this is remarkable. It speaks of personal, relational, experiential engagement with the master. But these guys, they're only slaves. They have no rights, no privilege, no status. And so, picture yourself in 30, 50, 70 years' time, or tomorrow morning as the master returns. You know, we may not have made the most of every opportunity, but we have sought to maximize the master's assets. Well done, good and faithful servant. You've been faithful a little. Come, enter the joy of your master. Now, we're going to look at the condemnation briefly in just a moment. Before we go any further, I want to say this. I am loath to apply this too directly. How many people are there here? 120? It will look different for every single one of us. Given who God has made us, the gifts he specifically entrusted to us, the opportunities we have, how can we maximize the master's assets? It will look different to every single one of us in this room. A couple of principles. What we're looking to do is to maximize gospel advance, not ensure professional advance. You know, you can't ride two horses at once. And so the question is, given who I am, my main priority now is going to maximize gospel advance wherever God has placed me. You know, that word career is not a Christian notion at all. It entered into the English language in the 16th century from the French language, and it speaks about pursuing headlong a particular course. But if I'm seeking to maximize Jesus' assets by advancing the Christian gospel wherever I'm placed, kind of making the pursuit of my career my overriding ambition, no, I'm trying to ride two horses at once. And God may make you CEO, senior partner, head nurse, run the office floor, or whatever it happens to be. He may do that. But am I seeking to maximize the master earth first and foremost? The second thing, maximizing gospel advance, not maximizing personal convenience. And so don't allow yourself to be blinkered. It could be any number of things. Where, given the person I am, actually those gifts could be really well used. I don't know, as the catering assistant that is working over in the kitchen we're looking to employ. Or they could be used to go and run an orphanage, as a person I once met. He was a very highly thought of civil engineer. And he said, oh, there's an opportunity to run an orphanage. And so, yeah, it's about maximizing gospel advance, not some maximizing my own personal convenience. And he and his family went off to do that. Do you see, it will open up any number of avenues for us, lines of employment, service that we had never, ever imagined. Third little principle, the priority is to maximize gospel advance, not maximize St. Helens advance. We mustn't sort of think this is all about just one church. It's about the advance of gospel work across the world. And then fourth, the priority is to maximize gospel advance, which is maximize the ministry of the gospel word, proclamation of the word. That could mean that you deploy your skills in IT or communications or catering or finance or practical skills, all sorts of things to maximize the advance of the gospel. It could be financial. You earn shed loads of money. You don't need it. You just give it away to gospel work. All sorts of things. If you have Bible teaching gifts, then you've got to think very carefully how you're going to maximize those. And for a number of us, it may very well be that the way to maximize those would be to stop whatever employment I currently have and head into being a paid Bible teacher. It's this parable that took me into teaching the Bible rather than staying as a soldier. Okay, finally, the condemnation of the wicked. And we have to finish here. It's where all four of the parables, well, the three parables and the one that isn't actually a parable, but they all end here. And it seems, just as commendation is a key part, so condemnation is key. And the great danger is that we spiral into introspection and say, well, this could be me, this could be me. And I want to suggest that this person at the end does not actually know the master at all. I say that very simply because of what he says in verse 24. Master, I knew you to be a hard man, reaping where you did not sow and gathering where you scattered no seed. So I was afraid and I went and hid your talent in the ground. Well, that's not what the master's like at all. We've just seen he rewards even the most tiny thing. He wants gospel advance. He's not a hard man screwing the last bean out of whoever it is he meets. He's full of grace. And so I would suggest this person never actually knew the master at all. Well, I'm going to close there. I think our time is well and truly up, but worth doing an inventory, isn't it? Who has God made me? What opportunities has God given me? How can I deploy them best to maximize gospel advance?